And welcome back to the Bicycle Indiana podcast, Life Behind Bars. Margaret B. here, Executive Director. Super stoked about this discussion. This is a topic that I think everyone, whether you're an elite athlete or just a new rider starting out, this is a discussion about health. Health is important. Feeling good on the bike is also very important. And diving into really uncomfortable topics, I wouldn't say uncomfortable, but just some serious topics about your health. So please, if you haven't had a chance, become a member today. That helps us keep rolling. There are multiple ways to become a member. The first one is you can go to our website and join, www.bicycleindiana.org. The other way is also you can join by getting a license plate, which you can go to your local BMB and search under Indiana Bicycle Coalition. That is our other name. But yeah, two ways to join and support us in many ways. Again, your membership keeps us rolling and keeps things happening. So I really hope you enjoy this discussion, and I hope you have a good day. Okay, so before we start the show, we'd like to take a moment to remind our listeners that Bicycle Indiana's podcast, Life Behind Bars, are for educational and entertainment purposes only. None of the information contained within this podcast should be construed as medical, legal, and/or professional advice in any manner. Information on our podcast and website are presented to motivate and inform our community members about cycling-related topics. We recommend all of our listeners consult with their own medical providers and other professionals related to any of the topics discussed. Thanks so much, and we hope you enjoy the show. Hey, and welcome back to the Bicycle Indiana podcast, Life Behind Bars. Margaret B. here. Really stoked to have this individual on the call to talk about something that I think everyone needs to, you know, take a moment and listen to their bodies and talk about health. So welcome to the show. And I'm going to do my best. I'm hoping I pronounce your name right. But Dr. Shimen from OBGYN, which, like I said, I'm going to have you introduce yourself and take it from there.
Yeah. Well, so nice to be here. My name is Shimen Neal. I always tell people that my first name rhymes with lemon, Shimen, like lemon. So it's easy to pronounce. And yeah, I'm an OBGYN and I work down at for IU Health.
Nice. Do you want to maybe talk a little bit about maybe your background? I have your, like I said, not to sound kind of creepy, but I have your bio on my screen here, but maybe it'd be better if you talked about it.
Well, I've worn many hats. So the one thing that brought us together is cycling. So we both are part of the cycling community, and so have been brought together by a mutual friend in the cycling community. So I really enjoy cycling and all things fitness and just being outside. I clinically am an OBGYN. I kind of practice in an area historically that's not many people in the country specialize in, so lower genital tract disease, so dermatologic disorders of the genitalia, the female genitalia, that is, and chronic infections and things like that. And so as in that work, believe it or not, I've had a chance to focus on that bridges nicely to sexual health. And sexual health, there's always a nice bridge to menopausal health and health of the aging woman. And so I've kind of taken a liking to that population and have done a lot of talks with community people and women about their bodies as they change throughout life. And I think it's something we don't talk about enough.
I agree. And with me why I got connected with you is because I'm having some questions and some personal health issues. And I've learned a lot. And yes, women's bodies change a lot, even if you are young, you know, on a monthly kind of cycle to even That's if right. you're heading to the perimenopausal or even the menopausal stage. But you can still ride and you can still be active. But I kind of wrote down, I need to have like kind of a generic health disclaimer saying like, if you are having any health problems, please reach out to your healthcare professional, your provider. Obviously, if it isn't a medical emergency, please, you know, call 911. But that's my general medical disclaimer. But no, let's kind of dive in here. Like I said, I'm really excited that I'm able to record this with you because obviously people like riding bikes. It's good for your health. It keeps people active. You are part of a community I know in Indianapolis, a group of women too. I've mentioned on multiple calls, the Divas. But it's incredible to see the growth in the sport, whether it is getting more women on bikes or just in general, getting people on bikes. I think Indianapolis has an incredible cycling community, but there are a lot of things to consider when it comes to health and feeling good on the bike, right?
Absolutely. There are, you know, I think just taking from my own personal experience, there's so much to being comfortable that you just don't know about, you know, when you come into this, into the cycling community, you don't know about that there's even a such thing as bike fitters. I think we come from, you know, our experiences as kids, you just get a bike and then any bike, it doesn't matter. And you ride it and you're fine. But when you're an adult and you start really cycling at, you know, long distances, high speeds, you want to do triathlons, all those stuff, then the comfort and the fit of the bike become incredibly important. And so there are all these things that people that take for granted that, you know, just seem like common knowledge. And then there's a lot of women specific things with comfort and, you know, irritation and all kinds of things that nobody talks about. And it's hard to find information on. And clinicians don't even have, you know, also expertise in that area because it's a kind of a niche thing. And so getting people connected to the right information is really challenging. And I think that's true for a lot of in health. There's so much information available now. It's really difficult to navigate like and to discern what is good information and what is useful information for me and what I'm going through.
Right. Well, I always say Dr. Google sometimes can be a dangerous rabbit hole, right?
Yes, it is. Dr. Google is not a doctor, and Google does not have context or experience. It's just giving you everything that's possible. It's just like opening a dictionary and looking for a recipe for cookies.
Sure.
All the words are there, but there's no structure or content for cookies and like the kind of cookies you want and all that in the dictionary.
Absolutely.
Plus the information is all there. Right. And that's kind of how I look at Google.
Yeah. No, that's great.
Yeah. So you need a chef to come in and like, you know, pull the cookie recipe out of the dictionary.
Absolutely. Yeah. And bike fits are really important. I'm glad you brought that up because comfort obviously is very important when you're cycling, because if you do 10 miles to, you know, 100 miles, if you are not comfortable sitting on that bike, you're going to have all sorts of things that I'm sure a physical therapist to a physician would definitely recommend a bike fit. I know there's a handful of bike fitters in Indiana, and I'll try to list maybe some of those in the description, but I have personally had a bike fit from Kelsey Devereaux, who's a good friend. And it changed how I rode. It changed my muscles too. It hurt for a little bit because I was adjusting, but it overall really, you know, improved my comfort, but also my efficiency.
Yeah. I've had many bike fits by different people. I've learned about the bike and, you know, just the, how your body moves on the bike and, you know, becoming an adult athlete. I did not exercise as a child. you know, I was like hurt all the time for 2 years, I think. So I learned a lot about my body and how it functions and my musculoskeletal system. And I've learned a lot from having lots of bike fits about, you know, little tweaks and stuff that I can make on my bike myself at this point to kind of get it exactly right. And yeah, that's a journey.
It definitely is. And it's great to have a bike fitter, but I think as you age and kind of change in your body, sometimes you do have to adjust things, like you said, kind of micro adjustments, to get the fit just perfect.
Yeah. And I think, people also just accept pain and they say, oh, it just hurts. There's nothing you can do about this knee pain I'm having, or this butt pain I'm having, or this chafing, or this whatever, this neck pain. And I will say that that is not true. You should, there is a comfortable bike for you. And, you know, when I rode with people and they're like, I could ride on my bike all day. And at the time, the bike I had, I was like, this thing is miserable. I have to push through. I hate this bike. It's just so painful. And it was just the wrong bike. And I wasn't on the wrong bike. I wasn't on the right bike. Sorry.
Yeah. No, that's a great point and good transition, because that's kind of the first kind of topic I wanted to talk about was, you know, what are some common things, and I've heard from girlfriends who ride and some of the divas that are part of the diva group saying, you know, I get saddle sores, or I have this chafing, or I have, you know, this back pain and I just don't know what to do. Obviously, like you said, a bike fit can help prevent some of those situations, but there are certain things, and maybe it is specifically medical related or just general, you know, bike shop, you know, knowledge. But one thing I do tell new riders, you do not wear underwear under, and, you know, under your chamois. You are supposed to wear your cycling shorts just like they are. No underwear.
That's right. That's right. That's true. That's very true. You know, and if I don't want to scare anyone out of cycling, but you know, if you're going a short distance, if you're going like 10 miles or something, probably okay. But if you are experiencing chafing, the bike shorts are made, that's true. They are made to not have underwear worn with them. And so, you should not, that's not the point, of them, especially if you're going to be riding for really long distances over, you know, 30 miles, you know, you're getting into the 60s, 80s, 100 miles, 160 miles. You've got to, every little piece of material makes a difference. And so, yeah, you do, you got to give that up.
So as a OBGYN physician, what are your thoughts on chamois creams? And are there certain chamois creams that you prefer? I've used chamois butter for, you know, ever, but since I've, since I got a bike fit, I don't use it often as I used to.
Yeah. I do like, the chamois butters, especially if you find that you are having some friction or irritation. I think that they're really good. If you're going to ride for a long distance, I think it's absolutely necessary. So especially if you're going like 100 miles or 80 or over 100 miles, I am a chamois butter evangelist for sure. The vulva is a sensitive area. It's very glandular. There's lots of hair follicles. It's a different skin. It's really kind of a sensitive skin. And so creating a barrier between the skin on your vulva and your clothes can be important for a lot of people. And so especially people who have dermatologic conditions of the vulva, like psoriasis or lichen sclerosis, where, you know, any kind of rubbing can, or eczema on the vulva. Yes, you get all of those things on the vulva too. It's just skin like the rest of
the
body.
I was like, you can get all that down there?
Yes, yes, yes. You can get all that. So protecting your skin and creating a barrier between your skin and the any material, the chamois, or even just sweat and moisture. So people with eczema you know, sweat can be really irritating to them. And so if they get eczema on their vulva, having a barrier, we kind of sell people to, you know, seal the area off with something like a sealant, like a Vaseline or something like that, that's going to protect your skin from the excess moisture. So the excess moisture can cause all kinds of irritation and problems for some people, not everybody. And so if you are one of those people, then really, you know, clean your skin, soaking it, and then covering, locking in moisture with things like chamois butters or Vaseline are really important.
And for all of our male listeners, there are obviously issues too in your department, you know, using chamois butter as well. I'm sure everything that you said applies to a male rider as well.
That's right. And, you know, I think also people itching. So just getting a jock itch, women get that too. And it's, the way that our, you know, things are structured, you don't think that it's not presented that way. It's like, oh, you have to go to the doctor. And there's all kinds of sprays and lotions and salves for jock itch for men in CVS, Walgreens, any store. If you didn't think about it, you would think that that's something that women can't use on the outside, not the inside of the vagina, but the outside. So like in the groin area, like between the thigh and the labia, like if you get a little itchy patch there, you can put Lamisil on in that spot and things like that. If it doesn't go away immediately, then yeah, you need to get it checked out, because there's other stuff that you can get, and that goes for men too. You can get skin cancers can start as itching, but it's usually one that won't go away. It doesn't respond to anything. But if it's just a little fungus, you put some Lamisil or you put some spray on there and it should go away in like 48 hours. That's what it was. And so men know that. And they get sprays if they get itchy. Sure. And they spray, you know, their testicles, and they're like, oh, I have jock itch, and they spray their testicles. But if women get it, it's like, oh my gosh, I got what's wrong? I got to make an appointment. I got to do all these things. Right. But you know, you can try little things like that.
So to all of our listeners, all our stubborn cycling listeners, because, you know, I'm one of those as well, go to your doctor if you're having issues that do not go away after trying to treat them at home.
Yeah, it should go away rapidly. So that if that's all that it is, it will go away fast. And if it's not, then if it doesn't go away, then you need to go in, which most people do. It's hard to tolerate itching and irritation on your bottom.
And us cyclists like to go fast. So if it goes away rapidly, then even better, right?
Yes, that's right.
So that was a common topic that I've heard a lot of women and men, you know, they don't feel comfortable on the bike, and then they have, you know, other issues. Let's talk a little bit about specifically, I guess men too, with hormones. As we age, hormones change. Obviously with women, it changes a lot different than men. I'm learning as a female getting older. I'm not, you know, super old, but I am changing as I'm, you know, getting closer to 40. But what are some kind of general knowledge and tips that you can let our listeners know, specifically when it comes to, you know, female health? What are some things to look at when it comes to hormones and getting older and things changing?
Well, I think my focus is you are more than just your hormone, your female reproductive hormones. Your body is a really complicated thing that has lots and lots of different hormones that we don't understand completely. And for women, historically, and this continues to be perpetuated, if there's anything wrong with you, it's your hormones. Oh, it's your hormones. Mm-hmm. I mean, and, you know, women were, you know, in our grandparents', you know, era, women just got their ovaries and their uterus removed for all kinds of things, anything, anything that was wrong with them, they got a hysterectomy because, oh, it's their ovaries. They're depressed. They're sad. They're having all kinds of, you name it. It was like, oh, it must be the ovaries. And while we don't do that anymore, the mentality kind of persists in society. So it's like, if you're a woman and you're having anything, especially if you're approaching, you're in your 40s, the first thing is it's your hormones. And there's these industries, I think, that are popping up that are selling supplements and
pellet therapy,
pellets and all this stuff. Because if anything is wrong with you, if you're tired, if you're you have brain fog, oh, it must be your estrogen. It must be your progesterone. We got to fix that. You need testosterone. And that is so bizarre and way out there. You are way more complicated than that. And I just say my general advice is, if that's the first thing that somebody says to you, if you're feeling anything, then you need to be suspicious.
Sure. Stop and maybe rethink.
Just kind of say, well, wait a minute. Really? Right. You know, right. Is that it? I don't like that. And I don't like when people have pain also that is in their pelvis, that the first thing that people say is, oh, it's your ovaries. They're hurting. It's your uterus. There's a whole specialty of people that you need to have on your show. You need to have a pelvic floor physical therapist on your show, because a lot of pelvic pain that I have diagnosed is musculoskeletal, and people just don't believe it. It's unbelievable to them that they could be having pain for so long and that it's not their ovaries or their uterus, because that's the only thing that people tell them that it could be. And that's really frustrating to me, because there are muscles, lots of muscles. You have the levator muscles and all these muscles, especially if you're cycling or exercising, or even if you're not, that can cause pain. You can have myofascial pelvic pain that can be completely relieved with a specialized physical therapist. There are there are pelvic floor physical therapists all over Indiana. They are wonderful human beings. I see one because I know what the symptoms are, and I know when that's what it is, and I know I can go and, you know, get some relief or whatever. But you can strain those muscles, especially like everything else in life. It's your core. If you have a weak core, then you're using these muscles in your pelvis that aren't really made to support you in the way that you might be demanding of them, and you can strain them.
Sure.
Just like any other muscle in your body, and it can really be super painful. And so getting in with a pelvic floor physical therapist and having one in your back pocket, just like you do all the chiropractor, your normal PT person, a pelvic floor PT person is just super invaluable.
Absolutely. And there's so much that goes into women's health and hormones. I mean, you're just touching a little bit of the big pool of options and discussions. But I did write down, and for all of our male listeners, I'm sorry, but we're talking about hormones. We're going to talk about periods, but you know, a female typically goes through a cycle every month. And how does that impact with the different hormones fluctuating and going up and down? And then obviously having a menstrual cycle, how does that impact an athlete, specifically a cyclist? I personally always felt amazing during my period, like not physically, no, but when it came to performance and fitness,
yeah,
I always felt the best. And I always read it was because my testosterone was the highest.
Mm. So that that's really hard to measure and to make that conclusion. We don't know, because all women probably don't have that experience where they feel better during their period fitness wise. Yeah. There's also, you know, your estrogen is really low at that time too.
True.
So is
yeah.
that it? You know, yeah. like, what are we talking about? So I think that conclusion is a hard one to draw. There's, how would you figure that out? How
sure.
do we know, you know, and is that every woman's experience? People feel different you know, it affects people differently throughout the menstrual cycle, like how people feel, your mood changes, you know, there's lots of different things that happen. And also I kind of tell people like every decade you feel different.
Yeah.
They're just changing, you know, during those times. So we don't know a lot about the endocrine system, period. We don't know all the effects of all the hormones that we do know about, and we don't know about all the hormones. So there's a lot we don't know. And drawing those conclusions are tough and they're hard to study. And so I wouldn't necessarily say, oh, yeah, that's it. But just being aware of your body and how you are, I think, is probably the more important thing. And I always really preach to learners that are going to be doctors and nurse practitioners that we have to trust our patients because they're the experts of their bodies, right? So you should be the expert of your body. And you saying, I feel the best at this time, I believe you, that is how your body behaves. And you are the expert of that. And so it won't be the same for every person, and that's normal.
Sure. Sure. So listeners, listen to your body and keep track of things.
Yeah. And also, you know, it's hard because we kind of don't talk about normal ranges of things and the idea that everybody can feel different and that there's a range of normal, for people. And so, it's hard to get information for people. So, you know, also don't feel bad if you have to ask and you just want to know, is this normal?
Right.
And clarify that, you know, when you go in and say, I don't want you to do anything about this. I just want to know if this is normal or not, because I don't know. I feel this at this time. Does that mean anything or is that normal? And, you know, as a doctor who sees lots of different people, I hear all of these different stories and symptoms. And then I can say, yeah, I've heard a lot of normal people who don't have anything wrong, have this feeling, you know, or this whatever, you know. We don't want to gross your male listeners out too much, but just like consistency of their periods and stuff like that. People want to know, like, is that normal?
Sure.
Or is something wrong with me? But it's embarrassing to ask people about that. So just be clear, you know, if you're going in for a checkup and you say, I don't want you to do anything about this. I just want to know if it doesn't bother me, but I don't know if it's normal. I just want to know, is this normal?
Absolutely. So as women age and men age, our fitness, obviously, and hormones and everything kind of changes. What can you, I guess, give our listeners a little insight in what to expect, I guess. Mm-hmm. I know you just said everyone is different, but typically kind of, you know, what do you see in some of your patients as women, maybe men too, I know you probably don't see that many men, but as women get older, what typically happens?
Well, so there's some things that we know physiologically about women that seem to be pretty universal, and that is that your lean muscle mass declines. And so what that means is that your muscle tissue kind of gets infiltrated by fat. So I tell people that you go from being like a filet mignon to a ribeye. You get a lot of marbling as you get older.
Yeah.
And fat does not metabolize calories or perform, obviously, as well as muscle. And so it is really important for women, especially, to do weight-bearing exercise. Mm-hmm. So you got to lift weights. You have to be very intentional about maintaining your lean body mass because it's declining over time. And so if you're not working at it, even if you don't change, let's say you eat really healthy and all that stuff, you're going to start picking up weight. So that is a common complaint that I get from women is like, I have not changed my diet since I was 20. Hopefully it's not French fries and fingers, but you know, like I eat healthy. I don't eat a lot, you know, whatever. And I'm just like gaining weight for no reason. So that can be one of the things that happens. We know that metabolism changes over time. We don't understand all the parts of it. And so it's really hard to address it, right? But the one thing that we know for sure is lean body mass. So we know lean body mass declines. We know that muscle metabolizes calories better. So really making sure that weights are a part, or weight bearing. So weight bearing can be body exercise like yoga, Pilates, all that type of stuff too. It doesn't have to be necessarily just weights, but there are a range of things that really focus on strength. So you have to be intentional about your muscles. And then also there's a lot of information about like eating enough protein, getting enough protein in your diet to support, you know, building new muscles and stuff like that.
Sure. And cycling is very cardio focused. I mean, you're sitting and you're just spinning your legs. You're not really doing anything with your arms. Maybe mountain bikers out of all the cycling discipline might have a little bit more of an upper body workout. But other than that,
You're not lifting weights. Exactly. So, you know, pick a day a week, add in some weight training. It doesn't have to be crazy. But yes, you should get in some weights. You got to lift weights. And I think a lot of cyclists say that. They're like, they say, oh, you know, I got to do weights, and you don't want to do too much on their legs. And I agree. You know, if you're in the right, I'm not a physical trainer, so please do not necessarily my advice. My own personal preference is to try to, you know, if I'm going to do leg stuff, that it's maybe in the off season, and then I'll try to do, if, you know, I'm terrible about it, like a lot of people, but, you know, try to focus on weights or doing weight bearing things like push-ups and stuff like that. Strengthening in the muscles that are important for cycling, like your hip flexors and your glutes and all that kind of stuff. Really important. Your arms.
Yeah. So does it change like that for men when it comes to body or muscle and lean?
Not as much, but we all know that our metabolism changes as we age. This is a fact, right? We know this because we just see it. We see it. You can't eat like you did when you were a kid. Mm-hmm. You eat like all you were growing. You're not growing anymore. You don't have to.
We're shrinking.
Yeah, right. You're not burning calories building a body anymore. You're not building bones. You're not, you know, your body isn't as active, and it's, you know, kind of just in a maintenance phase, and you don't burn as many calories just maintaining. When you're a kid, you're growing, and you've got to, you know, you're building neural tissue and bones and muscles and all the things. So that burns a lot of calories. But when you're done growing, you gotta slow down. You have to figure out like, well, how am I going to continue to burn calories like I did when I was younger? And that applies for all humans. You know, you've just got to continue to burn more calories, and keep your muscles active and all of that stuff. Muscle breakdown for men does occur. It just isn't at the same rate as it is for women.
Yeah. So speaking of calories and metabolism, I have nutrition written down, and obviously I don't want to go into too much detail, but when it comes to obviously riding a bike, or you could be a runner, you know, for a long period of time, what are some recommendations maybe you personally like to kind of go by for nutrition on the bike?
One, I think everybody should meet with a nutritionist. I met with Jackie Dykhouse, or Dykstra, maybe is her last name. She was fantastic, and she really helped me out a lot. I was feeling tired, and she told me all this stuff, and I was like, oh, whatever. I don't know. But I did it, and it actually helped, and I was so surprised. And so there's so much we don't know about nutrition. I was blown away. There's a lot that we're not getting in our diets. So, in the heat, I think probably I'm not a nutritionist. So full disclaimer there, I get nutrition advice from nutritionists. So I think in the heat, one big thing that I see and I hear people complaining about is getting dizzy and stuff, and people just drinking plain water. Mm-hmm. If you're out exercising, running, cycling, whatever, and it's hot, you need to replace the electrolytes that you're losing in your sweat. And if you're just drinking water, you are not going to feel good at the end of your activity. You must drink salt and potassium and magnesium. And there's so many different products out there. You got to find the one that tastes right to you, doesn't upset your stomach, blah, 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 is in alignment with whatever kind of diet you're on. Like some people don't want sugar, some people, you know, whatever that is. But you need electrolytes in your fluids. Do not ride your bike for 30, 40 miles or 20 miles without some salt in your, some electrolyte thing inside of your drink. And there's all kinds. I mean, there's millions.
I know.
Keep trying them because there's so many new ones that keep coming out and the technology just gets better and they just learn more about delivery and all that stuff and they get the flavors better and all that stuff. The other thing is you need carbohydrates as you're exercising. I know there's probably a lot of keto exercisers out there who are like, but they're, you know, I think the literature, for my interpretation, especially, is that performance is for endurance. It is better in comparison if you are taking in carbohydrate. That seems to be where the literature is going now. And so you got to find your thing. Like, you don't want to get out there and then like be totally exhausted and run out of energy. So making sure that you are properly fueled with energy. You need some energy, quick available energy that doesn't upset your stomach, that tastes good to you, and is a consistency that you can tolerate. Some people don't like pasty gels. Some people, you know, everybody has their thing. Some people like liquid. I tend to do a little bit better with stuff in my bottles than eating things. So you just kind of got to know your body. Again, you're the expert.
Yeah. Carbs are carbs. I'm not going to say this person's name on this podcast, but I had an individual that kept coming up to me and saying, you know, I don't feel good after these long rides. And I said, well, what's in your bottles? And this person said, oh, liquid IV. And I thought, okay, that's, you know, not too horrible, but she said sugar free. And I said, oh no, I was like, you need sugar, you need carbs. And so she doubled up on the scratch and had an incredible ride, the next ride. And I was like, there you go.
Yeah. And once you kind of get that dialed in, it will make your experience so much better. You shouldn't be feeling terrible after you do a ride. And if you do, there's like a lot of things that could be. It could be you're not fueling right. It could be fueling, F-U-E-L, or you're not heat acclimated. You're not getting enough electrolytes. There's a lot of things. And then also we would be not giving good advice if we said that, you know, recovery, the recovery drinks, which I admittedly am, you know, often I'm like, I didn't have time to do it or whatever.
Right.
On the run after, but those are really important too. They can actually make you feel better the next day.
Yeah.
So if you're not getting the protein, all the things, the fats, all the stuff that you need to recover from a long ride, you probably won't feel great the next day. And so those are things too. And then, micronutrients are also important. Just our diets suck and we don't get a lot of little nutrients. Now that was something that I always thought was like, oh, that's such voodoo, you know, like whatever. But I personally think they make a difference. But that's just my personal experience.
Yeah.
So paying attention to all that stuff. If you're feeling really tired and wiped out, those can be things too. But again, like if you're feeling tired and wiped out and you kind of get your nutrition better and you're still not feeling good, you know, please see a medical person.
Yeah. So whether it's something going on down south, your saddle, you're getting itchy, you're having situations or things do not improve, please contact your health provider and try to discuss some options on helping the situation. Also, making sure you have salt is another kind of review of what we've talked about, as well as, you know, obviously always talk to your healthcare provider in any situation if you're worried, because Dr. Google, as well as social media, can also have a huge amount of information that will flood your devices and it can be misleading. So I'm going to end on a note because I want to be respectful of your time, doctor. What are some words of wisdom that you can give to our listeners, whether it's specifically female hormone specific advice or just in general of health and cycling?
You are more than your hormones. Be suspect if the first answer to whatever issue you're having, unless it's your menopausal and you have hot flashes. Okay, that one is hormonal. You're having, you know, other issues, something's, you know, whatever's going on. Please be suspect if the first answer is, oh, we need to give you hormones or that's the problem. Menopause is a different topic and hormone replacement is very effective for a lot of that. That's a whole nother podcast.
Definitely.
If you're in your 30s and 40s and people are telling you you need pellets, I would be very suspicious.
Yeah. All right.
And get out there and exercise. It definitely has many, many benefits.
Definitely. Well, riding is fun. And I appreciate you taking the time to talk to me and letting our listeners know about kind of the ups and downs of how, whether it's male or female, our bodies change, as well as what to look out for when it comes to general health and riding a bike.
Hey, thanks for tuning in. We hope you really enjoyed this podcast. For more information about our organization and other future podcasts, visit www.bicycleindiana.org. Thanks for tuning in. We hope you have a really great day.